Hi, everyone. Welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Chris Rosner. Today, I'm joined by my fellow teammate, Thiago Almeida.
Hey, everyone.
And today, our special guest is Anton. Anton, would you like to introduce yourself to everyone and let us know what you work on?
Hi. So I am Anton Babojanov, and I'm a program manager on the API management team.
All right, great. And today, you're here to tell us about some of the new stuff that's come to API management since the last time, which has been quite a while, right?
Yeah, it's been more than a year and a half since the last presentation. Yeah, so I guess a quick intro to API management for the less familiar. API management is basically a gateway that you can use to take backend services that can be hosted anywhere and expose them as an API for consumption by third parties. And it's a full-fledged solution that includes also a developer portal, which is the experience for your developers to get documentation and to be able to register and get credentials to access your API. And also, obviously, the administrative interface, which we call the publisher portal. Now, it's important to note that the gateway is also capable of making modifications to your API in flight. So you can basically decouple front-end development from back-end development. So you can design your front-end independently of your back-end, and in fact, your back-end may not even be ready. It may be in development in that period of time. And of course, as everything passes through the gateway, there is also a built-in analytics system so that you can see exactly how much usage is being put through by your customers, by the developers of your API.
Yeah, one of the things I really love about the gateway functionality is if you've got an older API that you don't really want to update, like let's say you've got something that's exposing or returning all the data in XML, but you really want to expose JSON, you can make the gateway kind of do that transformation for you as opposed to having to rewrite everything yourself.
Right, and we offer a very powerful policy engine. In fact, we have, I think, a little over maybe 32 policies currently available that allow you to perform quite a wide variety of tasks and modifications to the API. Like transformations, like being able to modify any part of the request or response, setting headers, setting query parameters, changing the body, but also doing access control, setting quotas and rate limits, validating JWT tokens, and also do more flexible operations by writing C# code, something we called policy expressions, where really the limitations become very, very, very few as to what you can do when it comes to modifying the API.
So you could use that to for routing as well?
Yes.
So versions of APIs?
Yes, and actually versioning is something that we have implicit support right now, but we're working on explicit support as well. It's just in development right now, so there's a lot of flex as to exactly how it is going to work. But when it comes to routing, we support URL rewrite as a standard policy, and it's actually one of the most popular. It's a way to
Yeah, because I've been looking a lot into feature flags lately. From a front-end perspective, and then I guess from the API perspective, you could also deploy something, and then when it's ready or for specific users, enable it via API management once.
Right, right. And when it comes to working with multiple environments, in fact, one of the features I will show today is, and as you can see even on this slide, we now have the ability to access the configuration of your API management instance via Git repository.
Oh, cool.
So when it comes to working with multiple environments, people quite often set up a number of instances and have one instance for a test environment and another instance as a production environment.
Right.
And would like to move the configuration between instances in a very quick and easy way.
Great.
Okay, so as I mentioned, it's been a year and a half since the last video. And we have released quite a number of features since then. We've also had very strong customer growth, and I wanted to take a moment here to just highlight that. So today we have more than almost 6,000 customers, in fact, and we serve almost 6 billion calls per month through API management. We are now available in 24 Azure regions, and we basically have doubled in the last year. And I should just note that 12 of the Fortune 100 companies use API management.
Great. Very cool.
Yeah, so we've had a ride. And so we've released a number of important features. I want to highlight a few of them, and I'll also walk you through these features in a moment. So first, we now have a presence in the modern Azure portal. It is no longer necessary to go to the classic Azure portal like before to manage your API management instance. We also have support for SOAP services, one of the most requested features from our customer base. We are working on role-based access control, or RBAC. And also, as I mentioned, we have the ability to control the configuration of the API management instance through a Git repository. We also support ARM VNets right now. So previously, we only supported classic VNets, and now we also support ARM VNets. We have also released a key value store called Properties, which is very useful when implementing policies, because secrets, usually it's not a very good idea to store your secrets inside the policy definition directly. If, for example, you're using the send request policy and you're calling out to a different API to make an orchestration, you would like to hide your API credentials for that API in Properties. And also, we enable developers. So the developer portal is fully customizable. It is based on a content management system. It has always been possible to modify the static pages of that. But now we enable the API designer to also modify the generated pages. So we generate documentation based on the defined metadata of the API, and that has always been automatic. There's also a developer console for developers to hit the API without writing any code. Previously, these pages were non-modifiable, but now there's templates for all of these pages where one can make them match, you know, their company's corporate image or existing experience in any shape or form.
I take it the SOAP support would be pretty popular with the enterprise customers.
Right. There are still a lot of SOAP APIs out in the wild, and it was one of the most requested features. So even though we live in sort of the REST world and we talk a lot about REST, having the ability to do SOAP pass-through, which is currently what we support, and eventually also SOAP to REST, we found to be quite important. All right, so the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you through our experience in the modern Azure portal. So what we have done is that we have basically mirrored all of the operations that were previously supported in the classic portal. So here I am in the modern portal. As you can see, I can see general information about my instance. I can see basic statistics. And this is obviously in addition to the analytics that we support, which is accessible still via the publisher portal, which is the secondary interface where the full-on API configuration is done. Then we support, obviously, the standard operations we supported from before, like changing the pricing tier, changing the locations in which you're provisioned, setting up virtual networks. And as I mentioned, we do support ARM virtual networks here. And we also support two different models for deploying in a virtual network, which are external and internal. So previously, we only supported the external model, which basically meant that when you connect your API management instance to a virtual network, the gateway is able to connect to backends within that virtual network. But your API management instance endpoint itself is still available like before, fully on the public internet with a public virtual IP address. If you now deploy to internal mode, your API management instance will only be available within the virtual network. So it effectively becomes a private instance, and that is valuable for customers which want to protect their data from being exposed to the public internet.
Sure.
Does that include the developer portal as well?
Yes, so that includes all components. There's only one management endpoint that is available on the public internet in this case, but the developer portal and the publisher portal are available only internally.
Cool.
We obviously have the ability to change the custom, you know, basically set up a custom domain for your instance like before. Now you will notice there's this one new tab, APIs, here. So as existing customers are familiar, most of our experience was in the publisher portal, which you can still call from this button. But what we are doing right now is we are in the process of transitioning and basically re-implementing all the functionality from the publisher portal directly into the modern Azure portal. And this is the process that is going to take a while. It's going to take a few months. And as we do this, we are going to be releasing individual components of the publisher portal one by one in the modern Azure portal. And we'll be releasing them in public preview because we want to get the bits as early as possible. Mm-hmm. And we understand that they will maybe not be as stable in the very beginning as we do this very quickly.
Are they staying in both while it transitions? or as you bring features over to the modern portal, they'll start disappearing from the publisher portal?
The publisher portal will remain in place until the very end.
Right.
But our plan is to release new features only in the new UI, if possible, unless absolutely necessary to release in the old UI as well.
Great. Mm-hmm.
And just as a note as to how we're going to do it, so and I will in a moment show you the APIs blade. In fact, I can open it right now. We have requested feedback from a set of customers, and we've also looked at data to do a prioritization as to which features are going to come first.
Right.
And obviously APIs is the most important part of being able to create an API and set up policies for it. But following that, based on the data and the feedback, we will be working on products, which completes the ability to set up an API, because that requires being able to create the API, the operations for it, set up policies for it, and then add the API to a product. And also users and groups kind of had really the same priority, which was equally requested, which allows you to take care of user approvals or just see how users are joining in as you start running your API program. And after that, we will be working on properties and analytics, and then on security settings and notifications. So this is kind of the order in which customers can expect the various components to go live in the new modern portal. So here I am in the APIs blade that I just opened. And similar to the rest of the Azure portal, you can see on the left we have a list of items. So this is the list of APIs that I have in my instance. And if I open up one of these APIs, we will now get again a cascading set of items. We have another menu with the list of operations available in it. And if I open up an operation, we have a brand new way to present how your API works. So we draw a diagram of the entire API pipeline. First, I see the front end of my API. And on the front end, I can see exactly what the URL signature is. So we have a get method, for example, here, and /days as an operation. And I can see that this operation takes a number of query parameters, headers, and then there is a response defined, or in this case, even a sample response defined, so it can produce 200. If I go to the end of the diagram, I can see that it is connected to a backend, in this case, an HTTP endpoint. In the middle, I can see inbound and outbound processing. So these are really policies. And for each one of these sections, if I open up this little the menu for the edit button, you will see that we have both a form-based editor and a code-based editor. In this case, this is the OpenAPI specification, which is formerly known as Swagger editor.
Mm-hmm.
And the same applies for the policies. Again, here we have a form-based editor and a code editor, and even for the backend. So let me walk you through, starting from the front end, through these new editors so that you can see how they work. So the form-based editor for the API front end is rather self-explanatory. I can obviously define the URL signature of my API and also all the descriptive information that is used for the documentation on developer portal.
Mm-hmm.
I can define any query parameters that the API accepts. These are optional query parameters. I can define now also headers, something we didn't support before. So what headers the API supports. I can define sample requests and sample responses. And as I define each of these, for example, the sample responses, I define these responses per error code. So here, let's just say I pick 100, and I can define a separate description and a set of representations and headers for this response code. The reason why I can have a set of representations is because I can do this for each different content type. So I can define a sample and pick a schema for each representation.
And then when you modify this stuff here, you're not actually necessarily modifying, you know, the actual API that that your API management is kind of going against, right? You're monitoring the interface the API management produces for
Right. And if I go back to the beginning, that's why we split it up to front end and back end, because we really want to highlight the fact that I am modifying the publicly exposed mm-hmm. interface in this case.
Great.
And in fact, if I wanted to modify how this goes, how the API call that is going to be taken in here is sent to the backend, I can go into inbound processing and open this form-based editor. And here I see my front-end URL, and I can modify this URL to the back-end to something else. So I can do some basic form of routing. I can also add additional query parameters. If my backend requires them, I can add headers, and I can set the body as well.
Great.
Yeah, and for all of these editors, again, there is the code view. I can obviously find it handy here at the top. So now I'm in policy. If I switch to code view now, I will open up a rather familiar policy editor, just like we have before, although we've made it better. Since we have so many policies now, it has become difficult to just find them in an alphabetical list. So we've organized them by categories. You can see we have the cross-domain policies, the authentication, access restriction, all of the advanced policies, transformation, caching, and even XSLT now. So as this list grows, it's going to be more and more important to make discoverability of policies very easy. And this editor is very similar to what we had before. Now, I do want to highlight, if I go back, if I show you the code view of the front end, we now have a full-fledged Open API specification, or basically Swagger editor, built into the system. So this means that, and one second, I scrolled away. And this means that I can edit my API and get instant validation. So for example, if I make an error here, let me just scroll back. I will immediately get validation. And this is a very familiar experience to most developers because it is used quite widely across different systems on the web.
Yep.
It just enables one more way to set up the API for the people who prefer to write code as opposed to fiddle with the UI.
Great.
How easy is it to share policies between different methods or operations?
So when policies are defined, they're defined on a scope. And right now, if I wanted to set a policy here, for example, set query parameter, which I apparently set a moment ago, I can open up the code and I can, obviously I have set this policy in this case on the level of an operation. Now I can set the policy on the level of all operations.
All right.
So previously the policy editor looked a little different in that at the top of the editor there was a scope selector. Now the paradigm is that you first select the scope you want to edit things at. So for example, I can go to all operations here, and I can edit the policy definition here, and I can set a policy that's going to apply to all of the operations. So that is one way to make it apply to a broader set of items. I can also do this on all APIs because, again, this is a valid scope. Now, we do not have a way to make a reusable policy construct, like a library that you can call from multiple places. Although there is a little bit of a trick here, and I may jump forward a little bit to the properties feature, which I plan to demo later. So properties, as I mentioned, are key value items that basically it's a key value store where you can store code that you can then insert into your policies. And just as a note, let me just first quickly show it. So that is only available in the publisher portal. In fact, I have it open here.
So that's a new feature?
Yes. Well, it was released a while ago, but as I said, I'm sort of running through the year and a half of features here, or at least some of the most important, because there's also a lot of very minor improvements that we've done over this period of time. So here I see the different properties I have defined in my instance. I can see I've defined one called one channel 9. Which is not a secret, so the value is visible. To be able to use these properties inside expressions, inside policies, all I have to do is basically wherever, let's just say I wanted to set a set header policy. So for example, here in this value, I would just do one channel 9. And this double curly bracket notation will replace this value with the value of the property. Now, the reason why I mention it when it comes to reusability is because you can actually write policy expressions code. So you can write C# code inside the value of your property here. And then when this value is replaced, it will also be evaluated and executed.
Right.
So that's one way to sort of have reusable code. I mean, it's a bit of a hack. But it is the closest
cool.
that I can think of right now. So going back to basically new API step, one more interesting part that I would like to demo is the ability to add new APIs. So we've made it very easy to not just create blank APIs like before, or to be able to import Swagger Open API specification files to Watto, but we're working on making it easy to import Azure resources, like Logic App, which is currently enabled, and in the future, Functions App and API apps.
Yeah, that's very powerful.
Yeah, and to do this, all I have to do is basically select the Logic App. So I can pick one here. And in fact, I'm probably not going to import it because I already have it imported. But for example, positive, negative. And give it a name and a suffix, and then I can import it. And in fact, let me see if I can import. I already have this one imported, but let me give it a new name.
And you're currently working on the Azure Functions version of the same import?
Yes. So it may take a while for the other Azure services to get lit up. But we actually want to support much more than the three that you see,
right,
that you hear, see here eventually. But that is what it's undergoing.
Cool.
Okay, so the import succeeded. Here I see my new positive negative one API that I just created. And you can see that it created an operation. So what happened in the background is that it took the one trigger that was available in this Logic App. In fact, I can even see the Logic App if I click right here. The Logic App itself will open. And it took the one trigger and converted it. If I scroll back a little bit, it converted that trigger to an operation so that I can call it in a RESTful way. Mm. And in fact, I will not bother with the Logic App itself. But the other thing it did, which is very interesting, is it created a set of policies in inbound processing. And what these policies do is they basically make the conversion between the front end, the API call that we can accept on the front end, and what the Logic App requires to make a successful call to it. So we're setting the method to post, and we're doing a URL rewrite and changing the backend service to the correct. And this is basically the Logic App's backend service. So this about wraps up the part about modern portal extension. Another thing I would like to show you is our support for SOAP services. And so SOAP services are supported in both UIs, but I'm going to use the classic UI here because it is more stable. So to add a new SOAP API to your API management instance, the process that we support is importing it from a WSDL definition, which is basically the web services definition. Mm-hmm. We do not support creating a SOAP API straight from the developer portal because it's a very complex process and it requires special authoring tools. So I have one SOAP API available here that I can use for the purpose of the demo. So it's a simple orders API. This is the definition. And I'm going to import it by its URL. So going back here under import, I'm going to click from URL, use WSDL, paste in the URL, and give it a name. And again, this is an orders API. I'm going to add it to the unlimited product so I can make a call to it. And click save. And so in a WSDL definition, it is possible to have multiple service endpoints defined. Mm-hmm. Effectively, these are independent APIs. Mm-hmm. Now, to be able to match this to our API domain model, we have to ask the user which one would you like to import. If you mm-hmm. want both, you basically have to do the import twice. Okay. So in this case, I'm going to take the basic one. And the import succeeded, and if I click on operations, I can see that the import produced a number of operations. Now, these are post operations, because in the case of SOAP, all operations are post. And there's also a little indication here that this is a SOAP API, so that I can treat it differently. If I switch to the developer portal, let me open this up in a new tab. I will also be able to get OBC documentation for this new SOAP API. So here it is, orders API,
right,
under SOAP. And I can see all of the available operations that have been translated. For each one, I get the full request samples. So I can see the request body here that I need to make and various responses that the API can produce. And of course, I can also use the console to make a call and try the API without having to write any code. So let me make a call to this API here. And for it to work, I need to provide a value of customer number 1001. And there it is. I got a response. And so as you can see, I get a full response back from the API. Now, since I did this call, there's one thing I did not show in the new APIs tab, which is the ability to test call an API straight from the administrative interface instead of having to go to the developer portal like I just did. So if I switch back to the modern portal, and if I open up, for example, one API, we now have this new test tab. And it's basically a mirror experience of the developer portal, however it's built in here. And I can make a call to the API and get a response here. And this is very useful when I make testing. Cool. We also have made it very easy to get the trace of all the different steps that the proxy or the API gateway performed mm-hmm. when doing the call to this API. So we have, we have this new trace tab here. So if I open it, I will see that I have three sections for the basically inbound, backend, and outbound processing that has been performed. And for each one, I will see a set of basically internal operations and policies that have been executed. And I can, if there's an error, I can go see which one of these produced an error, basically what response each one of them produced. And I can also see how many milliseconds each step took. So if I'm doing a very complicated, for example, XML to JSON transformation, and if that happens to be taking a long time, I can see that as well.
Okay. And that's so pretty handy to troubleshoot it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So going back really quickly to the SOAP service capabilities now, do you have any policies in there that will help, I guess, modernize a SOAP API? So you can kind of take that SOAP API and then actually expose it via API management in a, you know, somewhat more of a REST manner?
Yeah, so we are working on SOAP to REST support. That is not currently available, but it's actually currently in development.
Okay, great.
And it can be expected early in 2017.
Awesome. Great. Very cool.
Yeah. So the next big feature that we released, again, that was very requested, and we're actually still working on it, is role-based access control, or RBAC. And for role-based access control, we want to leverage the built-in RBAC into the Azure Resource Manager. Obviously, as that is used by every single service. And the way we're going to implement that is by implementing a couple of specific custom roles for API management and allowing the ability to create new roles. So let me quickly show you the roles. First, there is the contributor role, which is default for Azure, and that is the full-on unlimited access role. Mm-hmm. Now, actually, one of the major requests for role-based access control was, I would like to give a user in my organization access to edit the API without having to make them an admin of the Azure subscription. Mm-hmm. So this is not the role you're looking for in this case. But we also have the editor role, which would have only read and write access to API management specific, basically data items.
And I can see they can't scale or configure the instance. That's pretty handy.
Right, and that's because we found that the people who tend to do that are a separate group of people, mm-hmm. and for them there is the operator role. So they cannot write, they can't modify the API configuration or products or users, but they can deal with the basically provisioning and making sure that there's enough capacity for the API management instance. Of course, there's a reader role, and then since access to the since the developer portal will remain as a separate entity, there's the question of how do we enable people to go and modify content, modify styling. Mm-hmm. So for that, there'll be the role of content manager, which will have admin access to, in this case, Orchard, which is what the developer portal is based on.
Great.
And for the case of just a note, for the case in Orchard, we'll basically use the native RBAC that is built into Orchard and allow admins to define roles with different permissions. But to quickly show you, the little bit of surface that is exposed right now to access access control, I would go to the blade that we have available for it, and this is standard for all extensions. Mm-hmm. And here I can see some of the users I have and the different role they're in. If I wanted to add a new user, I basically click add. I will select the role, like for example, service operator, and then I will select the user from my list of users that that I want to add this this access to.
So if you're used to using RBAC anywhere else, it's the exact same here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty handy to understand what each one of those roles translate to as far as access in the portal.
Definitely. Yes. Yeah. And we obviously have documentation for that, and we'll explain exactly how this would work. But it's also important that the user can create a custom role with a set of permissions. So right now I showed you the roles that we have from the get-go. But it is possible, for example, for me to say I want a role that has write access and has actually access to create, delete, and scale, but no access to Orchard.
Right.
So we want to provide users with this flexibility as well.
So you can create a custom role just choosing the right permissions that you
right.
want.
Yep. Right.
Great.
Okay. So the next thing I want to show you is the ability to modify the configuration of your instance through the Git repository. And again, this is right now still only accessible through the classic publisher portal. So if I go to security, this is the place where I would have to enable it. I can click on configuration repository. And actually, as I go here, I get all the details I need to be able to make a clone of this repository and get the configuration of my API management instance. So obviously, I get the address, and I get the username I have to use. To get the password, I'm going to go down here and basically generate a password for this instance. Now, I'm not going to go through the process because it may take some time, but I already have a repository that I have cloned from an instance, and I'm very quickly going to walk you through the folder structure and what's available in the Git repository. So here I have one cloned instance, and I can first of all obviously get the API definitions of the APIs available here, and I can edit them. So we have all the operations, we have all the different schemas, and this is in an internal format that we use, close to Swagger, but not truly. We have all the groups defined. Now, we don't have the users, of course, because typically that's information that you don't want to expose like that. But the groups are something that you may want to edit from here. We have all the policy definitions for every scope, so APIs, operations under them, and for products. We have the styling information from the portal, and also the templates, which I'm actually going to demo next. In a moment, so I won't explain this in detail now. And we also have the product definitions and the email templates for notifications as well. So this enables a set of users to a set of API designers to collaborate on the configuration with the Git workflow as opposed to using the user interface.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the last thing I want to show you is the ability to modify templates in the developer portal. So if I switch to the developer portal, for the familiar, we've always had this little slide out menu here on the right where I can modify styling. But now we have the templates menu item. So once I open it, I will see all the available templates in the system. And in this case, for example, here I am on the operations, on an operation. So if I open up the operation template, you will see I get this new code editor. And I get the template, in this case, of this operation page. In a basically liquid syntax, and I can modify it to my liking. And what we should be able to see here, it's not showing up for this template, unfortunately, is a list of all basically the entire data model that I can use to modify. That I can use basically when I insert dynamically generated pieces of information here, like for example the API name. Maybe my token has expired, so let me just do this again. Yeah, so here it is. Here I now see the full data model. It's quite possible that my token expired.
Okay. So if it doesn't show up, just do a refresh or reopen it.
Yeah, it's quite unusual actually, but you know, anything can happen.
Sure, especially with tokens and all that.
Yeah. And so we've released a lot of features over the last year and a half, but one of the things that we're trying to do right now is be very transparent about the features we want to release in the future as well. And so just recently, we launched a public roadmap. And that roadmap is available at aka.ms/apim roadmap.
And we'll include a link to that down below in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on this roadmap, we're basically going to show the entire pipeline of features that's coming up. So as you can see in this card space interface, we have a backlog of all the features that basically are getting a lot of requests. And actually, if you look a little closer, you'll see that there's this thumbs up icon here. So if customers log in, they are able to vote for features and kind of signal to us, we want this feature more than another feature. And also comment on a feature. So if I open up a feature, I will get a comment thread down below here and the ability to vote for it.
Great.
And we show the features that are coming up that we'll soon start working on and the features that are in progress right now that active development is going on. And of course, sort of a log of all the features we have released.
Good to kind of go and review and see what's been out there.
Yeah.
Spend on.
Yeah.
Great. So now, where can we send people if they have more questions or they want to read more or learn more about API management and some of the new stuff?
So we have a number of aka.ms short URLs. Well, first I should say the documentation is very easy to access at aka.ms/apim docs. But we now also have a blog, and that is at aka.ms/apim blog.
Okay.
And on this blog, we are going to have, we actually already have, obviously, posts about all the new releases and explanations of the new features as we release them.
Perfect place to go to find out.
So that that is one of the places. We also try to record videos every now and then of key features and basically screencasts of how to use them. And they usually tend to end up on the blog if we do it at the same time as the release as well.
Great.
So that is one place. We also have a user voice account if people want to vote for a much broader set of features than what's available here. And that is at aka.ms/apimwish. So it's where people can go to wish for features.
Right.
And then some of those will end up here.
Yes, some of those end up here. There's actually a very wide range of features there. There's a lot of requests that we have gotten from customers.
Great. And then the last thing is, do you have a Twitter handle in case people want to reach out to you?
My own Twitter handle is AntonBAA.
You have to wave your hand so we can insert it in the video.
Yes. My own Twitter handle is AntonBAA. We also have the API management Twitter handle.
Great. We'll make sure we get all those in the video.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, Anton, thanks so much for coming and joining us. I'm really happy to I'm always very happy to see another feature lighting up in the modern portal. So having API management in there is really great. And some of the new features you guys have been working on and some of the new capabilities is really awesome, especially the SOAP stuff.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
Everybody out there, thanks for watching. Make sure to follow us at Cloud Cover Show, and we'll see you next time.